one up, one down for the Kansas City Chiefs in 2015. The Chiefs smoked the Houston Texans in Houston. I mean, J.J. Watt was the star of the game if you ever looked at Twitter or ESPN. But that's okay. I'm not bitter. J.J. Watt's a great player. He just couldn't play quarterback or running back or any other positions that mattered for the Texans on Sunday. This is Reffing the Kicker on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can get to me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. We're going to kick off this show recapping the Texans game. Then we're going to look ahead to Thursday Night Football when the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning come to Kansas City, come to Arrowhead to take on the Chiefs. We'll give you a little more of a look into what Peyton Manning did last week as well. Look at the Broncos game a little bit as we preview for Thursday. I want to remind you again that you can support the show at patreon.com/RTK. Keep the show free, keep it running by giving a little bit of money this way. And one of the reasons you can subscribe to this show on iTunes, which you should do, is Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander. She's the top Patreon right now at patreon.com/RTK, patreon.com/RTK. Now let's talk about the win and the upcoming one. Kansas City Chiefs 27, Houston Texans 20, and this game was never that close. The Chiefs came out swinging early and then just dominated throughout the entire first half. The second half, the Texans came back a little bit. It seemed like Andy Reid and the offense really pulled back a little bit, played a little more conservatively, which they should have done, not to give the Texans any way to possibly jump back into this game. The most interesting thing and the most impressive thing that I saw in this game was how the Chiefs got away from J.J. Watt. Let's go ahead and roll through the game in a little bit of a timeline, and we'll pop up interesting points as they come. Before the game, though, the most interesting storyline was Eric Fisher, starting left tackle. He was starting left tackle. He was moved to starting right tackle before this game, but it came out that he had informed the Chiefs on Friday that he didn't think he'd be ready to go with his high ankle sprain matchup against J.J. Watt. Now, the Texans' field was in bad shape. J.J. Watt's going to challenge any right tackle in the league more than any other defensive end possibly can. But the fact that that report got out, that the Chiefs left Eric Fisher active for the game, Eric Fisher made an appearance late in the game, and he was visibly limping around. But it's not like the Chiefs to not protect a player like that. So I think at the very least, they were very frustrated with maybe getting mixed signals from Fisher. It sounds like he practiced all week and then didn't play on Sunday. So that meant, before the game, there was panic. Ja Reed, the recently released offensive tackle from the Baltimore Ravens, suddenly was starting against J.J. Watt after being on the team for less than a week. And that was a horrifying matchup. So the offensive line then was Donald Stevenson from left to right. Donald Stevenson, Ben Grubbs, Mitch Morse, LDT, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, and Ja Reed. None of those players started on the Chiefs' offensive line in week one last year. And the Chiefs' first drive on offense wasn't great. A couple of good things stalled, a couple of swatted passes, and then the Dustin Colquitt punted to inside the 10. Then the first play after that, Brian Hoyer looks left, throws right, directly into the arms of a diving Marcus Peters. So he had his first snap of his NFL career, rookie first-round pick Marcus Peters, was an interception. Then Alex Smith connected with Travis Kelce for a touchdown. Didn't have to go very far because of where Brian Hoyer threw that pick. It was a beautiful route, perfect throw, 7-0 Chiefs, and honestly, it never looked back from there. Then the Chiefs had a nice pressure on defense whenever the Texans got the ball back. Hoyer threw a great sideline pass to Nate Washington. There were a couple of plays like that where Brian Hoyer was really actually finding these receivers and not even necessarily DeAndre Hopkins in a lot of cases. But on 3rd and 10, Hoyer went way downfield to Cecil Shorts. Marcus Peters ran into him. No pass interference. Chiefs get the ball back on a punt. Charles gets smushed in the backfield by J.J. Watt. But then we saw one of the first bread-and-butter plays for the Chiefs in this game. It was a play-action screen. Smith scoots the ball right past J.J. Watt. Charles takes it behind the line of scrimmage and then cuts it up for the first down. One thing I said in the preview episode last week before this game is the Chiefs need to do the unintuitive and run at J.J. Watt. If you try to run away from J.J. Watt, he's going to come around and get you. If you try to drop back and just get in the pocket away from Watt and then shoot deep, he's going to get you. So they consistently, throughout the rest of the game, would basically just try to throw it right behind Watt or the other direction, but these passes behind the line of scrimmage, these are plays that I hate in most circumstances. It's 3rd and 12 and you throw a screen kind of thing, or even it's 2nd and 8. You throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage and try to make something happen. That's never consistently working in the NFL. But in this game, Andy Reid had a perfect game plan. It was constant. It was the death by a thousand cuts, except for it was like a 10-yard pass play every time it happened. The Chiefs knew what they had to do. They had to get the ball out quickly. Alex Smith was not going to get a lot of time behind that line of scrimmage. The offensive line had a huge challenge. The defense, obviously, J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, the rest of the guys that were coming on that defensive line were going to get to Smith. So those quick plays, I don't understand what the Texans' defense was doing where they weren't covering those ever and even never quite expected them. There were a lot of cases where the offensive linemen would pull and lead block for Charles or whoever was getting the ball, usually Charles, on those little behind-the-line-of-scrimmage passes that he wouldn't get cut up for 10, 12 yards. It was a fantastic game plan that was executed unbelievably well from all the units around. The Chiefs did that again, and then Adam Teicher noted that the Chiefs average more yards per play when D'Anthony Thomas is on the field, whether he touches it or not. So Thomas was on the field more frequently in those first couple of drives, but he still would never really made a huge presence. I'll find his stats here. Receiving, he got one pass for 2 yards, and he got one carry for 9. So I'm not super confident in his offensive role yet, although he was fantastic on special teams. We'll touch on that a little bit later. Another pass to Jeremy Maclin, though, near the first down. Maclin had a nice game, not an explosive game. That ended up being Travis Kelce. Then another play that I hate, a draw to Nile Davis. That's something that frustrates me beyond words, but it was a draw to Nile Davis. It was perfectly executed again, first down there, and then Smith drops back on the next play. Kelce is streaking down the field. Smith hits him. Kelce heads to the end zone while winding up for a Falcon punch, crosses the goal line, punches the ball through the end zone. 42-yard touchdown by the end of all of that. The Chiefs took a 14-0 lead. First two scores of the game were Smith to Kelce. And, you know, the Chiefs didn't have a touchdown pass to a wide receiver, so I'm not sure if it counts still. You know, I know that that's something that really bothers the Chiefs whenever their points are going in places other than receivers. But it just a great couple of first drives there for the Chiefs. Then coming back on defense, though, it was not a good time for the Chiefs' defense. Hoyer hit Cecil Shorts for 15 across Jamal Fleming. Hoyer had all day then. And then Jonathan Grimes got a hole, took it for 21. Nate Washington got open for 19. Hoyer hit Shorts for another 15 and got all the way down to the 2-yard line. Then Denard Hopkins, the best offensive talent on the Texans, no question, just climbed the ladder behind Marcus Peters and grabbed the touchdown. Peters covered Hopkins very, very well. But it was a perfectly thrown fade. Hopkins made the exact right play, caught the ball at its highest point. There was nothing Peters could do there. And then they missed the extra point. So it was 14-6, and at that point, the Chiefs, I think, did need to prove something on defense because Brian Hoyer was looking much better after that first big mistake in the first drive. Chiefs offense, again, went to that pass to Charles behind the line of scrimmage, went for 11, and again, that plan was fantastic. You clear out the defensive backs, get the ball to Jamal before Watt or Clowney or whoever is rushing can get to Smith, and then Charles has enough space to work with, where obviously we trust Jamal Charles in space, maybe more than any other player in the NFL. A little later in the drive, Travis Kelce got the ball from Smith, when Smith could have just tucked the ball and gotten the first down, but he nailed Kelce. It was a great pass, but then Kelce got crushed and stayed on the ground for a little while when everybody was panicking that he was injured. He ended up coming back and was continuing to be very good. Then there's a handoff around the left to Charles where Donald Stevenson was lead blocking and cleared two guys out of the way. Donald Stevenson had a really nice game. Nile Davis then took the ball with the middle, then threw some shifts around that I hadn't seen from Nile Davis in a very long time. Gets for the first. I've talked about all offseason that my issue with Nile Davis is not his talent or his ability, it's his vision. He has this tendency to see, not even to see the hole, but just to see wherever he's supposed to go and then just go in that direction. But in this case, he really read what the defense was giving him, made some nice moves, got the first down. So signs of vision they're developing for Nile Davis, which is the most important thing that he doesn't have yet. So Kelce came back, Smith forced a poor throw to Maclin, and Santos came out for the field goal. There was some speculation, though, on Alex Smith's poor throw that Demetrius Harris might have run the wrong route or made some sort of mistake, because it was a very poorly thrown ball from Smith if it was strictly just him missing his target. Santos hits the field goal. It goes 17-6, Chiefs. And at this point, I want to talk about the offensive line a little bit more, because it was this point in the game when Mark Schlereth on Twitter tweeted that the Chiefs' young offensive line playing exceptionally well right now. And he's right, and a couple of names that never came up during the game are the most important names from this game, in my opinion. We didn't talk very much about Donald Stevenson because he was doing a fantastic job. Ja Reed had his hands full with J.J. Watt, and the Chiefs were obviously trying to stay away from that matchup. J.J. Watt will beat Ja Reed constantly, so the Chiefs knew that. They had to play away from that, but they had the ability to. They had the ability to build a game plan around staying away from J.J. Watt and the Ja Reed matchup because everyone else played so well. And Reed played very well, too, don't get me wrong. But you just know that that's not a matchup you're trying to invite if you're the Chiefs. Ben Grubbs was fantastic. There was never that pressure up the middle that we got so used to last year. And the same goes on the other side, the other guard, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who I had no faith in at all. This is his first NFL game as of the guy to his left. But LDT absolutely held up. Never saw a problem from him, at least not a catastrophic one. And then in the very middle, Mitch Morse, his first NFL game. He's a rookie. LDT is in the second year. But rookie Mitch Morse, the second round pick, was fantastic. And he was matched up against Vince Wilfork, who is a mountain. If this offensive line can hold up with that kind of pressure, especially the interior offensive line, I think the middle of this offensive line might just be one of the top little three-man units in the league. I'm very concerned about the edges, and we'll talk about that a whole lot more when previewing the Broncos game. But those middle three guys, Grubbs, Morse, and LDT, had really, really fantastic games. And Stevenson and Reed did very, very well also. But especially those three interior guys, it was a borderline dominant performance, and they were going up against guys you never would have expected them to win that matchup against. So the offensive line really, really settled some fears here early on in this season. Then D'Anthony Thomas started here, or continued here, a trend that would continue throughout the game, a punt return roughly to midfield. Three guys ended up hitting J.J. Watt on this next play, and then Alex Smith hit Jeremy Maclin for 20. It was perfect. It's another example, and this is something that I lost faith in Andy Reid throughout last season a little bit because the offensive line never improved. They didn't make the changes they should have been making, and the offense just looked so anemic. But this was the kind of play calling and the kind of craftsmanship that I expect from an Andy Reid offense. They see, okay, we want to get a shot at Jeremy Maclin here. We want to shoot downfield. We've got to put three guys on J.J. Watt right now to make sure we have time to do that. And it worked. You can't do that every single play, but you can do it once in a while, and it worked perfectly. Then after that, Watt got his first sack. Jarry had ripped his helmet off. Third and 20, though, Smith hits Davis behind the line of scrimmage. Get it to fourth and 8, and then Andy Reid was going to go for it. Houston used a timeout. Then Sanders comes out, kicks the 48-yard field goal, absolutely nails it. 20-6, Chiefs. Then the next drive, Jay Howard got his first sack. Then on third and long, Justin Houston strip sack. Chiefs recover on the 7. At this point, the route was on. First play, another super quick pass to Charles, who turns it up, gets it in for the touchdown. Three touchdown passes for Alex Smith at that point. 27-6, Kansas City Chiefs. It was just, at that point, like I said, the route was on. On third and 9 for Houston, on the next drive, Marcus Peters made another great break on the ball, like we'd seen him in the preseason a couple of times. Forced another 3-and-out. Nice punt return by D'Anthony Thomas, but the Chiefs went 3-and-out and wasted some great field position. But then in a 2-minute drill, Hoyer completed a deep bullet to Washington, went to him again. Chiefs blitzed. Hoyer hit tight end Ryan Griffin down the middle. Allen Bailey then got to Hoyer for the Chiefs' third sack of the half. Hoyer almost had a touchdown on 3rd and 9, but Fleming broke it up in the corner. There was some talk for a pass interference there. Didn't happen, mercifully. I'm going to talk about Jamel Fleming for the Broncos game. He might be my biggest fear on Thursday night. But the Chiefs hold the Texans to a field goal, goes into halftime, 27-9 Chiefs. And at this point, it just felt like the team could have put it into autopilot, and I guess they sort of did on some level. But it was really a fantastic, fantastic first two quarters of the season. I couldn't have scripted it better. It was all around. The defense stepped up where they needed to. They allowed a couple of mistakes here and there. But even then, like DeAndre Hopkins getting over Marcus Peters for that lone touchdown of the first half is not something you can necessarily beat. You just have to. That's a case where you say, okay, the offense executed this perfectly. What you have to do then, as the Chiefs' offense, is match that somewhere. And the Chiefs did more than that, that's as the scoreboard showed. John McClain on Twitter, one of the Texans beat writers, said, Andy Reid and his assistants have done an outstanding coaching job of exploiting the Texans on both sides of the ball. And Brandon Kiley tweeted at BK Sports Talk, said that the Chiefs were outcoached in game one of 2014, and that was not about to happen again this year. I think that's a fantastic point for both of them there. Last year, Reid basically started out the year with the biggest lack of confidence builder imaginable. Getting beat by the Texans at home, being outcoached by the Titans, I'm sorry. Getting beat by the Titans at home, being outcoached by the Titans at home. Just a miserable start to the year. So in this case, the tables are completely turned, and I have more faith in Andy Reid right now than I did probably at any point last year, because Andy Reid lost a lot of my faith in week one, and they never quite got it the whole way back. This year, I feel like Andy Reid and this team have, I think Andy Reid and John Dorsey have built this team how they want it, and that Andy Reid is now, he is surrounded by the pieces he wants, and it's up to him to make the calls he needs to get this team rolling. The second half, it almost feels like the second half of a preseason game, and the second half was definitely less important because it was almost over at the end of the first. But the Chiefs blitz when the Texans had the ball the first time didn't hit Hoyer, but something I talked about in the preview show, they don't have to. The important thing is they hurried Hoyer, who is not good and is worse under pressure. Skips his pass, punts to Thomas, gets it back to midfield. Chiefs have the ball. Smith shoots deep down the sideline. Macklin hauls in a beautiful 39-yard catch. The ball traveled 35 yards in the air, but his head bounced off the Texans' crappy-looking turf, and the play was ruled incomplete, although I think there's a really good argument to make that Macklin absolutely had control of the ball, even through the catch, but I digress. Even though that doesn't count, Macklin made a great physical play, and Smith threw the ball 40 yards in the air. What's important from that play, since the game was pretty much in the bag, on, you know, as much as it can be in an NFL game, the important thing here is that that is now in the playbook. And everybody who's ever going to play the Chiefs is going to understand they might throw it behind the line of scrimmage to Charles and let him turn up for 12. Or if we get obsessed with that ability or with covering that kind of play, then Smith might drop back. You buy a little bit of time and he can shoot it 40 yards in the air to Jeremy Macklin, who will catch those passes. So the Chiefs have such a versatile number of weapons and different types of plays they can actually execute this year. Whereas last year, they had like three different plays. It was a short pass to Bo, handing it to Charles, or getting sacked. Chiefs pump back. Hoyer hits a tight end for a first down. Chris Polk got another, then a 32-yard catch and run from Hoyer to Nate Washington. That one looked like it might have been Marcus Peters' fault in his first NFL game. The Houston kept driving, but the Chiefs' run defense stuffed Alfred Blue on 4th-and-1 at the 10. Dontari Poe, who I haven't even mentioned yet, who played in the game. I can't remember if he started or not, but he got plenty of snaps. Dontari Poe and Jay Howard were huge on that play. Just stuffed it up. So Poe being back and present is such a fantastic thing. It makes me feel better about the Broncos game coming up on Thursday. And Charles got the ball around the left side, hits the edge, gets the first down when he didn't have the best angle, doing Jamaal Charles things. Smith got pressured. Kevin Harlan said they were sending Macklin very, very deep on that play. Would have loved to have seen that shot. Then Watt gets a shoestring sack. Everybody freaks out. Chiefs pump back. The Texans kept completing passes, and it seemed like Brian Hoyer, was targeting Jamaal Fleming pretty frequently, and that horrifies me for the sake of Thursday night whenever I preview the Broncos game here in just a couple of minutes. Derek Johnson, who looked great all game, got his first sack of the year. He was standing in a very Justin Houston kind of position and blitzed just outside of Jay Howard, got to Hoyer. Chiefs got the ball back. Smith hits Kelsey again. Smith went deep for Macklin, fell short. But again, those plays are going to happen and defenses are aware of it now. That threat was just never there, and really at any point since Reed and Smith have gotten here. And I happen to be one of the Alex Smith believers that he can throw that deep ball whenever he has a receiver like Jeremy Macklin. With the exception of maybe Michael Crabtree's best year, this is Jeremy Macklin is Alex Smith's best downfield threat. Even Vernon Davis was a downfield threat on some level, but he was a tight end, obviously. The weapons that Alex Smith has right now, he will go deep when he can, as long as the offensive line holds him up. But I think we're going to see that pretty frequently this year. I really like what I was seeing from Alex Smith so far. Another sign of good news from the offensive line is with 11 minutes left in the game, Ja Reed got a holding penalty against J.J. Watt. And that was either the first or second penalty on the offensive line, on the whole team, all day, and I believe it only ended up ever being two. Definitely only two on the offensive line there through the first 50 minutes of the game, almost. And with an offensive lineman who was recently released going up against J.J. Watt, I will take that every single day. Chiefs punted again, but Dustin Colquitt had a fantastic game, constantly put Houston in bad spots. Curtis Siebold of 810 WHB. So the Texans starting field position on Sunday. Here were the yardage markers throughout this point in the game. 7, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 18, 20, 11, 20. They had not started past the 20-yard line, but then Santos later missed a 51-yard field goal, giving the Texans good field position for the first time of the day. But let's go ahead and stay with special teams for a second and talk about DeAnthony Thomas. He had 5 punt returns for 81 yards, as long as it was 19, but it seemed like he constantly, wherever he received the ball, got it really, really close to midfield. And more importantly, just looking at the eyeball test, he did some things that, pardon the exaggeration, but I don't think it is one, reminded me of Dante Hall. Anyone fast can take an angle and cut it up the field, or just take an angle and run. But great punt returners, as I've talked about with Niall Davis, have vision and patience. And there was a point in this game where DeAnthony Thomas just paused and waited and then cut and went after already, you know, he got a few yards, paused, waited, shifted, took a different angle then. It was a fantastic, very Dante Hall-esque amount of patience. Thomas keeps developing, and I think he's going to continue to get better and better. Ryan Mallett then came in for Brian Hoyer, and he looked good. Mallett drives, got a touch on DeAndre Hopkins, fantastic two-point conversion. Ended with another fantastic play by Hopkins. Chiefs gets the ball back. Watt goes unblocked. Smith goes towards him. J.J. Watt eats his lunch. That was bad. That was really bad. That was the only play all day where I went, oh, that was, they just ran into J.J. Watt. Third and six, short pass to Travis Kelce. Too short. You know, I've talked about this constantly. My least favorite play in football is when Alex Smith throws the ball 4 yards on third and six. But Travis Kelce shrugged off a defender, got the first like a king. Charles made a great play to get the Chiefs to fourth and one, but the Chiefs punted with 3 minutes left. This is when Eric Fisher showed up in the game at some point. I don't know why. At one point, it sounded like Donald Stevenson had to leave the game for possibly just one play. He was visibly limping, but that was odd. And then Alan Bailey got a sack while hugging the offensive lineman who was blocking him. Then Mallett, though, drives a little bit. First down is a two-minute warning hit. Hit Hopkins, but the drive stopped. Bullock hits the field goal off the upright. And then on the onside kick, the Texans cannot pull it in, and the Chiefs take it 27-20 in Houston. The Texans were a one-point favorite in most places before the game. It is so hard to win in the NFL. After watching this game, I think more highly of the Chiefs and less of the Texans than I did before this game. I think that the Texans are going to be hamstrung until they get Arian Foster back, unless they go with Ryan Mallett pretty soon, because he seems to be the more dynamic passer, at least. But the Chiefs looked awfully good in this game, and not just because they matched up well. Frankly, they don't. The Chiefs didn't match up well with the Texans. The Texans' defensive line against the Chiefs' offensive line should have been a blowout in the Texans' favor. But because of the scheming and the ability that the Chiefs have to spread the ball around, I think it was a fantastic showing, and it made me feel very optimistic about the Chiefs going forward, because they went into a bad matchup, and not against a great team, but against a good team on the road, week one in the NFL, where every team has hope and some real fire happening in that first week. On the road, not a very good matchup against a pretty good team, and they dominated until, you know, the second half sort of got away from them a little bit. But there was never any real fear that they would go on to blow it or anything. It was overall, I just think it was a fantastic, fantastic showing from the Chiefs. Two penalties for 25 yards and zero turnovers. That might be the most important stat line that the Chiefs have in that game. And I already mentioned Morse, Grubbs, and LDT. Another name we just did not hear talked about for the best reason, Hussein Abdullah. He was on the field for most of the game, and also to some degree Ron Parker. Oh, all of the safeties had awfully good games. There were definitely some times whenever a receiver would split up the field and make a play, but I don't think I can't remember seeing Abdullah, because I don't think Brian Hoyer ever threw towards him. He might be the most underrated player on this defense. There are a lot of big names and a lot of big money on this defense. Abdullah might be the most underrated player that the Chiefs have on that defensive unit. Alex Smith ends the day 22 of 33 for 243 yards and three touchdowns. Jamaal Charles, 16 carries, which is about right, but for only 57 yards. Not a great day on the ground for Jamaal Charles, but that's okay because he went 5 for 46 in the air. And I don't see the yards after the catch numbers here on the box score that I'm looking at, but I bet almost all of those yards were after the catch. And it was an interesting game for Charles, I suppose, because it didn't feel like the Chiefs were constantly feeding him and forcing him to win the game, but he showed up big in so many places on so many of those behind the line of scrimmage passes that he ended up taking for 10 yards. It was a really effective day for Jamaal Charles, although the stats weren't flashy, and he did get that one touchdown. Travis Kelce, though, just crushes the day. On six targets, he gets six catches, 106 yards, two touchdowns, highlighted by that 42-yard touchdown, ending with the punching of the football through the back of the end zone. Dominant day for my favorite player, Travis Gronkowski. Jeremy Maclin goes 5 for 52, 20-yard play was his longest. He had nine targets, only brought in five of them. At least one of them, I think, should have been a catch. But again, the threat of Jeremy Maclin right now, and it's not just the threat, because it will happen. The legitimate threat of what Jeremy Maclin can bring to the table with this team and this offense now is so hugely important. It's reasons like that. You have to respect Jeremy Maclin. Those behind-the-line-of-scrimmage plays or the more traditional screens make sense for the Chiefs, because the defensive backs and the safeties have to respect Jeremy Maclin and keep that guy floating over to hell with Maclin over the top, because if that safety was constantly coming up to try to stop the screens that the Chiefs were running so effectively, the next play, Macklin would go deep and Smith would nail him. I think it's, frankly, I think it's about that simple. So the Chiefs' offense has gotten so much better. The defense looked really good for the most part. The fourth quarter, the Texans brought in 11 points, but before that, they'd gotten only 9 through 3 quarters. Really good showing by this team in all facets of the game, offense, defense, special teams, and coaching. In all cases, the Chiefs absolutely just stomped on the Texans, and I have a lot of hope for this season going forward, even more than I did before week one. Now for Thursday night football, the Denver Broncos will be coming to Arrowhead to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. First home game of the year, Red Thursday. Not only is this game important, I think it's going to be a very good game. But before we get to that, we have to look at what the Broncos did on Sunday. They beat the Baltimore Ravens at home, barely, 19-13 in a really ugly game. The Broncos got out to an early lead, but it was a battle of field goals for the most part. And the most surprising thing here is just what the Broncos offense looked like. And then the Broncos defense I'll talk about next, I suppose, because that's sad. But Peyton Manning was 24 for 40 for 175 yards, no touchdowns and a pick. And then and running the ball, Ronnie Hillman went 12 for 41. C.J. Anderson was 12 for 29. The run game would not get going. Peyton Manning was not throwing the ball well. His arm was falling off. Demaryius Thomas, 7 catches for 60 yards. Emmanuel Sanders, 8 for 65. But that was on 11 and 12 targets, respectively. Just the offenses on both sides had miserable, miserable games. And all the way to the point of where I think the biggest story this week has been, you know, is this actually it for Peyton Manning? I think it's been about 10 games now since Manning's injury where he has just looked bad. He is supposedly healed, but he looked bad in this game. He was getting beaten around. This is also important. The Broncos offensive line, now sort of towing into what the Chiefs are going to have to do to win this game, the Broncos offensive line is fragile right now. It's inexperienced. They brought in Evan Mathis, and that's supposed to help, but against the Ravens, the offensive line was letting the Ravens get to Peyton Manning, and in the past, Peyton Manning has had such a quick release, such immediate reaction, such good vision, that a poor offensive line almost doesn't matter because he gets rid of the ball so quickly. But in this game, Manning got hit. He got knocked around a little bit, and even whenever he had some time, he was not throwing the ball well. The Ravens were disruptive. They sacked Peyton Manning 4 times, hit him 5, and I don't think I've seen Peyton Manning get sacked 4 times in a very long time. It almost seemed like the Ravens decided they were going to stop the run here, hold down C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman, and then make Peyton Manning throw it, which is the opposite of how you've taken on Peyton Manning for years now. But in this case, it worked pretty well. The Ravens defense holding the Broncos in 19 points is nothing to complain about. It really, the reason the Broncos won this game is because the Broncos defense looked really, really, really good. And that scares me. That scares me a lot. The Broncos hit Flacco 9 times, only pulled him down twice for the sack. But overall, it was more watching this team. I don't think you can look at stats for this game and see how fast the Broncos defense looked. It seemed like every short completion or even every run play, the Broncos defense just swarmed on the ball so quickly and so dominantly that if the Broncos win an Arrowhead, it's going to be not because Peyton Manning throws for 500 yards again, but because the defense is going to make Alex Smith's life a living hell. However, riddle me this. This might be a little bit crazy, but I think it's true. The Ravens defense held the Broncos to 19 points in Denver. And I think the Chiefs defense is better. I think I would take the Chiefs defense over the Ravens defense, especially saying the Ravens defense in Denver versus the Chiefs defense in Arrowhead. I'm not going to say that the Chiefs definitely hold the Broncos under 20 points, but I think I would take the Chiefs defense in that discussion. I really do. And offensively, I think I'd take the Chiefs offense over the Ravens offense. And the Ravens should have beat Denver on the road in this game. Peyton Manning on 4 days of rest, if he really is this broken man now, I'm not sure how effective he's going to be. I'm talking myself into this really easily, and that's scary. Now, the biggest matchup problem from this week, I think, will be with Manning's receivers, and even though he might be losing some of his physical ability, I have no question that Manning is watching every bit of film that he used to watch in years past and will know where his matchups are. Demaryius Thomas matched up on Marcus Peters is advantage Broncos. Demaryius Thomas is one of the biggest, most physical, most dominant receivers in the NFL. Marcus Peters going into his second game. I really like Marcus Peters. I think 5 years from now, we're going to say Marcus Peters was a fantastic first-round draft pick. But right now, that's advantage Demaryius Thomas, and I think Thomas will beat Peters a few times to enough to make us want to pull our hair out a little bit. And then Emmanuel Sanders, who actually led the team in receiving yards in Week 1, is going to be matched up probably with Phillip Gaines, and I would give the advantage to Sanders there as well. But the scariest thing is not particularly Andre Caldwell, although I think he'll be the third biggest threat with possibility for Cody Latimer. But whoever ends up matched up across Jermell Fleming is what scares me the most. And I think we're going to have to see Hussein Abdullah, Tyvon Branch, a little bit of Eric Berry, certainly Ron Parker, really helping out with these matchups, because these young corners, I think there's a lot of depth there, a lot of talent there, but I would cut off my left toe for Sean Smith to be in this game. On the other side of the ball, I think the Chiefs actually have an advantage on the offensive line. Let me tell you the names at the front. Well, at least in the defensive line, offensive line perspective. Vance Walker, who we all know, Sylvester Williams, and Malik Jackson are the left defensive end, nose tackle, right defensive end at the top of the Broncos depth chart. I feel just fine about this offensive line holding up against those guys. The scary thing is that DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller are on this team on the edges at linebacker. And that's going to be a very big problem. Plus, they have Shane Ray, the rookie they just brought in, and Brandon Marshall and Danny Trevathan are the inside linebackers. But bringing in Shane Ray, Ware, and especially Von Miller to rush the passer scares me a lot. And in fact, I think we might see a very similar game plan to what the Chiefs did against the Texans. Short stuff, things behind the line of scrimmage, and then eventually, I think the Chiefs will exploit the Broncos. I think they will continually keep that short passing game a part of the game plan. And then whenever the Broncos finally bite on it too hard, Smith will pump fake it to Charles behind the line of scrimmage and unload it deep to Jeremy Maddox whenever he thinks he'll have enough time to do it. And that will be the game's big play if I had to predict a specific play like that. I was dreading this game. Now I'm really excited after seeing what the Chiefs did against the Texans. And I'm going to go ahead and drink the Kool-Aid. Peyton Manning looks like a different man. That defense is horrifying, and I am afraid of it. In fact, and on Thursday night games are usually quite low scoring, at least they were through last season. And with a 13-19 game in Denver with a couple of offenses that we thought would perform much better than that, and now with a Chiefs defense that I think is just as good as the Ravens, if not better, I think we're going to see another really low scoring game. I think the Chiefs are going to beat Peyton Manning finally in a surprisingly low scoring game. I'm going to say 20-17. Chiefs win. Yes, Peyton Manning will score just 17 points in Arrowhead on Thursday night. Those low-scoring Thursday night games, Peyton Manning did not look good. Now, I will say, though, if either team scores 34, I'm going to be tempted to say it's the Broncos, and Peyton Manning just suddenly, he snaps his arm back into place, and he throws the ball over Jermell Fleming's head 100 times. If I had to make that sad sort of prediction, I'd go that direction. But I think the Chiefs win this game. I'm going to take it 20-17. I think they win it in a nail-biter at home on Thursday night. I'm excited to see it. I really am. This is either going to be this could be a real shift for Peyton Manning. Although, again, Peyton Manning and the Broncos won at home against Baltimore, one of the best teams in the league. It was at home. Winning on the road in the NFL is hard. If it was in Baltimore, yeah, I think the Ravens would have won that game. But I don't think Denver's going to go 7-9 this year. I really don't. I think regardless of how this game goes, it's going to be a very close divisional race, even with the Chargers, who started 1-0 with a win over the Lions at home. So but I think what this game does say is how for real the Chiefs are and how for real this Houston game was. Was Houston just completely worthless on offense and that was the problem and made the Chiefs defense look better than it is? I don't think so. I think the Chiefs defense is for real. I think the Chiefs offense is getting better and better. The offensive line is going to be very interesting. Andy Reid said that Ja Reid is getting most of the snaps at right tackle with the first team in practice. Eric Fisher, I would assume Eric Fisher won't be starting. Just 4 days after he tapped out against the Texans. And I really like Eric Fisher. I know I've talked about Eric Fisher a lot, and I think we saw a lot of really good stuff from him. So the move to right tackle was surprising to me at first, and then now this narrative that he just might not play this year is horrifying to me. But Ja Reid looked fantastic. If Ja Reid had played really poorly, I think we would see the Chiefs going back to Eric Fisher. But the importance of this game, I think, is also where the Chiefs stand in the divisional race. If they go 1-1 and they're behind the Broncos and they lost the Broncos at home, the pressure is really on the Chiefs. If the Chiefs win this game, it's still just it's even, and they technically have that one game lead over the Broncos. Starting this year 2-0, I think, would obviously just be great, but especially looking at how the schedule starts off, there was a thought, you know, the Chiefs could go 0-4 or at best 2-2. Those first four games and probably 1-3 or probably 1-2 through the first three, then going for Monday Night Football in Green Bay next. So if the Chiefs could take this game from the Broncos at home, start off 2-0, I think we're going to see the rest of the season through some rose-colored glasses for a few weeks. That has been your Roughing the Kicker Optimism Variety Half Hour. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, at JB Briscoe on Twitter. Please remember to check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/RTK. And if throwing some money this way isn't for you right now, just tell people about this show. You can leave reviews on iTunes, share the show however you see fit to your Chiefs family. It doesn't have to be your real family. It can be like your football family. I want to make sure we always have this Chiefs-focused podcast forum for all the Chiefs kingdom. And I always want to hear from you. Good things, bad things, or just questions, want to talk football. Twitter, JB Briscoe. I love being able to have those conversations. Or in the comments on arrowheadaddict.com. As I said, my name is Joshua Briscoe. I apparently really think the Chiefs are going to beat the Denver Broncos at home this Thursday night. And I also like to think about myself, unlike Peyton Manning, as we saw last week, and I think Justin Houston and crew will prove this week, I work well under pressure. Bye, Mom! Please go get him, Justin Houston.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?